Pick up your paintbrush, it's time for Hobby Support Group. Hello listeners, Tom here with a short rogue video. Andy, Ed and Ben don't know I'm recording this, about my thoughts on Bolt Action version 3 being announced by Warlord, and to sort of also put a few of my thoughts in why I don't think it's necessarily fair that Warlord are being pilloried quite as much in what they are. Andy and I had hoped to have a chat about this and the announcement of the Hail Caesar epic range, but unfortunately I've had to go to work on Monday morning, so that's what delayed that. So I'm recording this and hopefully we'll get it out to you ASAP. Now, I think I am personally quite pleased that there is a version 3 of Bolt Action being released, because long-time listeners will know when this podcast first started, Andy and I were pretty much just playing Bolt Action, and Bolt Action was the gateway game that got me into historical gaming, got Andy in there as well, and most of us, like our gaming group, have played Bolt Action a lot, and it was the game that got us into playing other historicals. It's a game that I played pretty much only for like nearly 5 years, got pretty good at it, both as like an individual player and a team player. Like Andy, I and our friend Dan won a team competition with lots of like the ECT teams, and like I won a Warlord tournament, and also Andy's also did very well at the GT. So it's a game that we played a lot and we really liked. And I think it's also important to be mindful of, though, that it's also a game that we haven't played a single game of for like nearly 3 years, because of the problems that crept into the game as more and more books came out, and the inconsistencies within those books, and the way that the wider community sort of chose to play with some of those books turned the game into something that I don't really like very much at the moment. And I think that when, back in 2015-16, I first started getting into Bolt Action, I was very lucky in that you had events like Cambridge Too Far and some of the other tournaments that were put on by tournament organisers who were like very involved in the game, and they were also very proactive in sort of managing the game and managing the lists that people submitted, and was sort of like actually saying, you know, no, that list is basically too cheesy, or that is too exploitative, resubmit it, make a change. That's an awful lot of work for tournament organisers. And over time, I think a lot of the louder voices in the tournament scene especially are those who wanted to take anything or wanted to be more, we'll say, competitive. And the tournament scene, for me at least, became something which wasn't particularly fun to play in. This is just from my personal opinion. Obviously, listeners, if you love the tournament scene, that's entirely your choice. There is no right or wrong way to play these games. But I'm just not particularly a fan of turning up and going, oh, here's the Indian Army Armoured Camp Platoon with, you know, 300 points of free stuff that you can sort of like game about if you take rules as written. Anyway, this is not going to be Tom moans for 20 minutes. I promise. There'll probably be quite a bit of moaning because it's me talking. But I think, and I was thinking about what I was going to say in this, and I honestly think that Warlord get an unfair amount of flack, I think, for their games, because they are seen as sort of like the GW of the historical scene, in that they sell games which are entry-level games, I think, for a great many people, and this is either never do the period properly, or they're just designed to sell rule books and that sort of stuff. And you know, of course they're trying to sell stuff, they're a company that aren't just doing it for fun. They need to sell things that actually make money. And I think a 28 mil World War II game, if you'd have just like Bolt Action version 2, when it first came out, was a great game. But once everybody'd got the original army books and you've built the armies that are in them, you never are ever going to have to purchase more models to play with those armies. You know, once you've got an M3 Sherman, you've got an M3 Sherman for life. No version of the, there's never going to be a book that comes out that is all of a sudden, oh, these M3 Shermans have had like now a redesigned turret, so you need to have that. And like, I know with like my 28mm Germans, I've got pretty much enough armor that I've got, I can field like nearly one of almost like every major variant of German tank, and quite a few of the experimentals as well. So, oh, there was like three or four of these were in production. Yep, I'll have one of those. So like, if they bring out a new plastic, you know, oh, here's a new Panzer IV variant, there's very many chances they've already got it by either another company or built it from one of the pre-existing kits. So, as you know, if you've built Easy Company in 2020, you're never going to build another Easy Company, even after you've, if you know, you rewatch Band of Brothers, you're going, oh, I'm going to do that again. But then they go, oh yeah, but they've now got slightly different redesigned helmets. It's not going to happen. And I think if you've got a company that are trying to actually sell models, they're not going to sell a huge amount of the main nation models, because once you've got the army, you've got it. So one of the ways they can only really sort of do that, I think, is with the books and putting out new units and expanding on what they are sort of like in bolt action terms, like the minor nations. So I said, oh, you might have your Americans, but, you know, have you got any Brazilians or, you know, any of these things? Now, that's, I can understand why they do that. The problem, I think, comes with the inconsistencies in the design philosophy that they have with them, and that there is no consistency between the books. So one book, something will be priced at 20 points, in another book it will be free. And so you have no internal balance within the books. And also you have this infuriating thing I have with them, where some nations are sort of perceived as rubbish, looking at you, the Italians, and like no matter how many books they sort of have, they are always, you know, the ugly stepchild who only ever gets bad rules and this sort of stuff. And it was the Tough Undergut book, which was like, you know, the third or fourth attempt that they had to actually give the Italians some decent rules, where I checked out and I was like, I'm no longer buying these rule books anymore. So I was buying all the campaign books, all the army books. You know, I spent hundreds and hundreds of pounds on bolt action books, and I haven't bought any for the last couple of years. And I'm not overly upset that all those books I've got for the current version, when the new version comes out, are going to be invalidated, because I can't say, oh no, I can't use those books I've already bought, but I'm not using them already. So it would be nice if they were going to be valid, but the problem with them is they've broken the game, because they are just too inconsistent among them. Like, what I hope Warlord do going forward is, like, basically having this opportunity to have a reset, they then go forward much slower and go, actually, when we bring out a new book, it's going to be fully tested and actually going to be consistent with everything that's come out of beforehand, and just automatically doesn't become a, well, this is amazing, and it invalidates all the other books because this is simply so much better. I do not think, I personally think, like, one of the, like, reason why, for me at least, bolt action sort of died a death towards the last few years, it's a historical war game that has suffered massively from Codex Creep. And I think that is possibly influenced by the fact that a vocal, possibly minority of the tournament scene, but a very vocal part of it, are vocal former 40k players who are sort of used to that sort of Codex Creep and the idea of, like, the new book comes out, that's going to have the best armies in it. You build your army for that. as soon as the next book comes out, that's going to be the next hotness. You do that. I do not think that sits well with the more traditional historical player who has a, I play this, this is what I play, you know, I've got my US Marine platoon, just give me like usable rules for US Marines that are going to sort of function all right. Don't all of a sudden bring out like amazing Swiss units, which all of a sudden then you only just suddenly start facing like Swiss guardsmen everywhere. Warlord are in sort of like, in many ways, like an enviable position in that they are the entry point that many people take when they're getting into historical games. So, you know, you've probably been playing GW because, you know, this hobby is GW and then everybody else. But everybody else combined is still infinitesimally smaller than GW. You know, it is... This hobby is GW, and then the scraps are everybody else. And I think, like, historical gaming is, you know, the sweepings on the floor of miniature wargaming compared to GW. And I think, like, as, you know, especially, like, historical gamers are quite often, you know, the hobby is greying, and, you know, we're seeing, like, every few months it seems to be, like, one of the established or, like, long-established manufacturers or something are calling it a day through retirement or sort of, like, ageing out of the workforce. You know, I think it's... We need... The hobby needs to look at where are we getting newer and younger gamers from, and almost all of them are going to be coming from GW. And I think Warlord provide that access point of, if you're coming from GW or if you're coming from Mantic, Warlord give you a product and a system of gaming where it makes sense to you. That I want to get into this game, what do I do? Right, here's the starter set, here's the rules, here's the miniatures, here's the tokens or whatever else you need. And they also provide you with a rules system that makes sense to you, that you don't need somebody else to play. Like, you know, if you pick up any of the Warlord games and you and a mate have it, or you and a friend have it, or, you know, you give it to a friend, to child, them and their friend will be able to play it without any outside knowledge. Like, I think personally nowadays Chain of Command is a better game than Bolt Action. That is only because Ben has basically sat down and held my hand through many games of Chain of Command and given me his like homemade quick reference pamphlet so I can understand it. I challenge anybody out there to pick up any of the Lardy games and give it to somebody who's only ever played 40k and say, play this, and them have the foggiest idea what they're doing about it. And I think the Lardy games are some of the more accessible, more historical games, because I don't think as the historical games community we necessarily do a great thing of making our games accessible or making them necessarily make sense to people who don't have a huge amount of like pre-knowledge either about where you get the miniatures for these things or actually what you need to do. So you read a Napoleonic rule set for many things and it will list off a whole range of different units and all this sort of thing, which may not necessarily correlate to any single manufacturer's range of miniatures. So all of a sudden you're looking through, I need these five or six different kinds of French cavalry, and then you actually, you know, it probably might not even tell you in the rule set that they're actually all functioning more or less the same, or they're all whatever they are. So you have to sort of like do a lot of shopping around to build your things, and as you go down in scales it gets even worse. And so I think like Warlord offering that thing of like, here is the starter set, here's what you need, is such a boon to the hobby because it gives people that level of familiarity. And you know, you build a Bolt Action army, you go, here it is, here's your 1,000 points, whatever. You then get a little bit of familiarity with what you're doing, and you can go, oh, I'm now going to build out full platoons, or, oh, I'm now actually going to maybe expand this army into like a full company. And you can sort of, it allows you to do those kind of things. It gives you that footing and grounding, which most other historical games, I think, sort of like auto assume. And I'm convinced going forward, that assumed knowledge is simply not going to be there, because people aren't going to know. And I think especially also with like a World War II game, the like the cultural points that people are knowing from sort of like both sort of like the popular history but also pop culture are also lacking. You know, I think probably like I think it's interesting to note that sort of like even in like bolt action, Band of Brothers is still seen as like the entry point key thing to get most people in, and probably like Saving Private Ryan. You know, they're moving a TV show that, you know, 20 or over 20 years old. You know, people who are 25 now didn't grow up watching Saturday afternoon war movies every weekend. They didn't necessarily grow up hearing stories about World War II every elderly person they spoke to, like those of us who are sort of 40 plus did. I don't think, especially I think here in like Britain, World War II on like an active level is part of the popular sort of like psyche as much as it was even 20 years ago. So I think it's a harder get in for people when they don't necessarily, they're not going to recognise what a Tiger is or even like a Sherman necessarily. It could be, you know, as almost as difficult as some of us trying to go, what's the difference between like a War of the Spanish Succession and an Austrian Succession Grenadier? No, maybe a bit of an extreme example, but there's something to sort of like be thought about. And so I think having a mass, easy to access World War II game, I think is a boon to the hobby, because it then allows people to get their feet under the table playing historicals and then go, oh, I really like this. Let's give a go at playing some Napoleonics. Let's give Pike and Shot a go. And then before you know it, they're playing Pikeman's Lament, or they're playing Blücher, or they're playing Soldiers of Napoleon, or they're playing any of those other myriad games that most of us historical players do, but they're playing it from a place where they're at least familiar enough with the concepts so it isn't completely alien. You know, I think it's, you know, you've played a little bit of bolt action, it's much easier to then start playing, jumping into playing Chain of Command. Because, you know, once you know what like an MMG team is and a light mortar and all this sort of stuff, it's complete. It makes a lot more sense to you once you have just that tiny little bit of familiarity with it. And I think also, I think the idea of getting rid of all the existing books, starting with a new version, starting with sort of like PDFs for the army lists, I think is a great thing to do. And as I say, I only hope that going forward, when they release the new books, there is some sort of like internal consistency with them, and they are more mindful of not letting a fan of a particular army or force write the rules for it, so that they become amazing and become better than anything else in the game. I think, you know, either that they have a design team that goes, everything has to fit within this design team, or they just bring out the rule book and go, this is it. We're not really going to bring out as many books for it. We're just going to bring out smaller army lists. And like, I wouldn't mind if, you know, they bring out version 3 and they go, we're going to bring out sort of like 3 or 4 books over the next 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, 4 years' time, we might repoint it again and sort of like bin it and start again relatively fresh. As long as they are mindful and they are clear in what they say. You know, you don't want them to go out and go, oh, here's version 3, then bring out then another 15 supplements over the next 5 years. and then bin it again, because it gets to the point where it's become horrendously bloated and everything like that again. I think, hopefully, going forward, they will be like more consistent with what they do, and also they may be more consistent. They could maybe look at like the way that Mantic bring out their like their repoint list thing every year, where they have every year they bring out sort of like their album for like everything that's been like repointed or adjusted sort of every year. So, you know, if some things have been like a bit undercooked or a bit overcooked, they're adjusted every year. So, you know, right, I want to play Kings of War regularly each year. I'm going to be paying 20 odd quid for the new rule, the new points book, which has just all the points for all the units in. I think that would be, I would not be objecting to Warlord doing something similar to that for Bolt Action, where they go, oh, we'll bring out the campaign books, we'll bring out more scenario books or whatever, but they may be a bit more considered. And I think they are definitely being a bit more considered at the moment, because the pace that they were bringing them out had like dramatically slowed. So I think that is something that they obviously were working on. But I also think going forward, I think it will be interesting to see what happens, because I personally am convinced that the days of 28 mil large skirmish games, which is what Bolt Action is, are, I think, somewhat numbered, because great many people just don't have room for 6x4s anymore, and people are wanting either to place games on a smaller scale, bigger battles, or smaller unit, smaller size games with 28mm figures. So I'm thinking, I'd be interested to see what happens going forward. But I'd be interested to see what Warlord do in general with all their epic stuff. Because I think, you know, I think if we can jump forward 3 or 4 years' time, I think it would be interesting to see which ranges are getting more support. Is it the epic ranges or the 28mm ranges? And I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's more of the epic ranges, because I think for historical gaming, small scale wins all the way. And I think from where I sit in my little bit of the hobby sphere, Kings of War and like 15mm World War II seems to be having a renaissance, as does the 12mm Victrix stuff. So I would be very interested to see what happens with that. And I wouldn't at all be adverse if, like, I will probably be picking up Bolt Action version 3 when it comes out. Like, I'm not in the position where I will need to buy anything to play it apart from the new rules. But I could see people who wanted to play it actually going, do you know what, we could play this with those Victrix things, like the Victrix 12s, which look beautiful. I think they're big enough to play with as individual figures. And we will see what sort of happens with that. Because I think that is also something that is possibly like more difficult for Warlord as like a company trying to sell things, is the fact that once you've got your army, it's an evergreen army, and you just don't need to buy anything else with it. You know, you've got a British platoon for Arnhem. It's going to sort you out for your British paratroopers for as long as you need. You're never going to need anything else. So if that's what you want to play British Paras, you play British Paras. The only way they can get you to sort of like invest in more models is to do a different army. And I think, you know, we will see what the rules are like when we come up to them. Well, thank you very much, listeners, for listening to this. I hope it hasn't been too waffly and I haven't sort of like fallen down too many weird tangential wormholes without anyone else here to rein me back in. And this, I'm not speaking for the podcast. This is just speaking from myself's point of view. I have gone rogue without chatting to anybody else before I recorded this. I was just free this lunchtime and thought, I was actually thinking about this. And I've realised my thoughts had actually changed quite strongly on it, because when it was first announced, I was quite ambivalent. I was like, oh. But then I realised, actually, no, Bolt Action was very important to me. And I think it does form like an important function, possibly for the wider hobby sphere, so I wanted to put this out. Please share your thoughts on the Facebook group and let us know, and hopefully next week should have an episode with all four of us where Andy, Ed and Ben tell me how great Salute was. So speak to you soon, listeners, and goodbye.